Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. And by let's get started, I guess I mean let's get finished. This is the final episode of GNU World Order, and it's a review of NetHack. Somehow that's weirdly appropriate, I don't know. So NetHack is, it's the final package in our big list of Slackware packages. It's in the Y directory. It's a pretty legendary dungeon crawler game. ASCII-based, as all of these little games are. You go into a dungeon, you wander around, you explore, you fight monsters, you loot corpses, that kind of thing. Like many dungeon crawlers, it's as much about managing inventory and health as it is getting to any place in particular. As far as I know, there's not really an end to NetHack. I've definitely heard of myths of people who have been playing the same game for years and years and years. And it is very procedural. Like, this is one of those games. You manage your character sheet. It kind of manages it for you. But, I mean, you equip a weapon before you use it. You know, you cannot just start using a weapon. It must be equipped. You have to load your ranged weapon before you can fire it. That kind of thing. You have to monitor your HP. You have to eat food. It's a game about maintenance as much as it is about the act of combat and moving through pretend physical spaces. The man page claims you only need to know two commands to get started, the question mark and the forward slash. The question mark lets you see the commands that are available in the game, and the forward slash is to look around. You can look at, like, objects and monsters and something else. I can't picture it in my head right now. But, yeah, you can look around to kind of get your bearings. And you can type question mark to see what exactly you're able to do right now. It is technically true that you only need those two things. But that is an exaggeration. I mean, that is, or rather, a simplification. You would do yourself a real favor to write down the actual commands, not necessarily like all, I mean, because there's a lot of commands, there's a lot of things that you can do, but what you could do is maybe as you discover them, maybe write them down. If you're like me, I'll forget that if I press this button, it does this thing. So maybe write it down on a piece of paper by your keyboard or something, and that way the next time you pick it up to play, you'll have a little reference sheet, a little cheat sheet there. I'm sure some things eventually will cycle out. You'll get embedded in your brain, but yeah, write it down as you go. You'd also do yourself a favor of getting a book of graph paper. Draw the map. Just draw it out. Trust me, you will appreciate having that later. As you go deeper and deeper, a map is helpful. So I really like NetHack. I can't say that I'm an avid NetHack player. I have played NetHack a lot. I enjoy it quite a lot. It's a little like, you know, the adventure text game from BSD Games or Colossal Cave or whatever it's called. But the format of NetHack connects with me a lot better. Like a top-down, grid-based dungeon, that's something I'm very much used to. That's a comfort zone for me. My memories of, like, being a kid in school and not doing schoolwork and instead, you know, hanging out in the back of the room with my friends, drawing out little dungeons for each other or just for ourselves, but we would be drawing them together. That was something that we did, you know, D&D and Zelda and those kinds of games. There's something that I'm very used to. So this is really, really familiar territory to me. And unlike something like Adventure or Zork or whatever, this doesn't attempt to give you the illusion of an open world where you can issue commands and be understood by the world's most dense dungeon master, as it turns out. This is a proper turn-based RPG, or maybe better said, it's like a proper solo war game, like a skirmish, a tiny skirmish game. Well, a big tiny skirmish game. Anyway, it's all rendered in ASCII, so it does use very obscure notation. That's another sort of barrier to entry, I guess. It's important to look around a lot so you can identify those symbols. The most important one you need to know is the at symbol. That's you. You move yourself around with Vim commands, and you can go diagonally, like with all these other games, with the Y, U, B, and N. And everything else, just look at it before you go rushing in, trust me. I mean, sometimes you'll get attacked at range anyway, so it won't really matter. You'll know it's there, because, yeah, you're getting an arrow shot at you, or an axe thrown at you, or something. But otherwise, yeah, have a look around. I think if I were going to invest, like, serious amounts of time in NetHack, I'd want to run it on a server so I could kind of SSH in from anywhere and then just spend some idle time on it. Because, I mean, like, if I'm at home and I'm going to spend hours at home playing through a dungeon, at least right now in my life, I think I'd just prefer to just go to my little gaming table and break out, like, a Dungeoneer deck or Cursed City or Blackstone Fortress or a D&D board game like Wrath of Ashardalon or Castle Ravenloft, or grab a handful of miniatures and some dice and just play a physical game, you know? That might change at some point. You know, maybe I won't have the luxury to do that, and NetHack will be a great little solution that fits on my laptop screen or something like that. Maybe that could happen. For now, I think for a dungeon crawl, like, given the choice, whether I think about it or not, it's just I'm going to go to my gaming table and do a physical game. That aside, though, and allowing for changes in circumstances where maybe NetHack would be the most convenient and realistic way to do a dungeon crawl, which it has been in the past, and that's why I'm giving it all this context. Like, NetHack, when I didn't have physical gaming assets, NetHack was the way I could do a dungeon crawl. And especially, you know, back before, believe it or not, there was a time when playing games on Linux was not necessarily the most easy process. And so, again, like, NetHack was kind of like a really cool way to get that experience, the dungeon crawl experience, in with no real investment, like no setup. You have to learn NetHack. That was the setup. But I think for as obtuse as it might seem, like if you open it, if you start a game, first of all, take the auto build suggestions, like just let the computer build a character for you, or don't. But I mean, that's what I would do. And then you're dumped into a dungeon. And at first glance, you think, well, I will never figure this out. It's just a bunch of lines and dots and random letters and an at symbol. But believe it or not, it's actually pretty easy to learn. Like, you get used to it pretty quickly. And at least for me, it's kind of surprising how evocative the world of NetHack can be. Like, once you get started and you start exploring, you start to get pictures, or at least I do, images of like the dungeon and the goblins and the killer lichen and all the monsters. Like, you get images of them in your mind, and it becomes surprisingly evocative, especially if you put some good, you know, fantasy type music on in the background. You can really kind of just zone out and play through a dungeon, and it's a lot of fun. And I think, in a weird way, NetHack is exactly what it needs to be. By which I mean, it has a clear set of rules, clear parameters, a pretty well-defined world. The interactions between you and the game are clearly defined. You can sit down, launch a game of NetHack, and then hack and slash your way through the dungeon, save, quit, feel very satisfied that you've played a game today. And that is very much my style of game. That's what I like. And speaking of that, actually, I should mention, to save a game, it's Shift S. It's very hard to find. It's not in the man page. it's probably listed somewhere in the, complete list of all possible actions. It is definitely not in the man page. I checked. So Shift S saves your game, and you'll want to do that because you don't want to have to start over all the time in NetHack. Trust me, that's not a fun experience. You deserve to level up. Be kind to yourself. So if you like a good dungeon crawl and you're in a scenario where, you know, you're sitting in front of a terminal and you're just like, I need something fun to do, try NetHack. If you're in a scenario where you're trying to get some game time in and you're in a small place, you don't have room for physical gaming assets or something, or you don't have the money for it, try NetHack. If you're curious about retro gaming, try NetHack. There's so many reasons to try NetHack. So try NetHack. Honestly, really, really fun. That's it. That's the last package, which literally means that's the end of the show. There is no more GNU World Order. That's the end. It's been fun. Thank you very much for listening and for sticking with this show for however long you've stuck with this show. There are lots of episodes in the back catalog if you want to hear my voice some more and haven't heard older episodes. Some of them are probably of interest. Some of them probably aren't. Either way, thank you for being on this podcasting journey with me since I don't even know when. But I've certainly enjoyed all of the people I've met through this show, and I'm sure I'll probably see you around online or on Gopher or SDF or something. Go get a cup of coffee. You've earned it. My goodness, you're still here. Sorry, the show's over, actually. I was just clearing some stuff out. But look, thank you. Thank you for showing up to the final episode. It's been fun, right? It was cool. Did a little bit of NetHack. So I was thinking, actually, about when I started the podcast, and I could not remember what year it was, but I looked in the archives, and it was 2007. And it started out, you might not know this, started out as something called the Bad Apples podcast, which was a reference to the fact that I was a guy compiling and running Unix applications on an Apple computer. And I was doing that because, like, I mean, you know, I've said this a lot on the show. I grew up with Macs. Like, Mac computers were, that was like, to me, that was a normal computer. And I kind of grew up thinking that PCs were like this aberration. And I know that that's exactly the inverse, okay? I understand that. But that's what I thought as for whatever reason, I just thought, no, Macs are the normal ones and PCs are the aberrations. So that was kind of like my understanding of the computing world. And so I just thought at the time, I just thought you had to use a Mac. Like that was what a computer was, right? But when I finally discovered Unix, which bizarrely appropriately for these past couple of episodes, I was looking for games to play in a terminal because I thought, well, if I can figure out how to play games in a terminal, I could be using a terminal and no one would really understand what I was doing anyway. So I'll look for games in a terminal. And through that, I found Tetris. embedded in Emacs. And when I discovered Emacs, I discovered its license. And his license was the GNU public license, and so, or the general public license, GPL. And so that led me to open source. So I started, I was, my mind expanded instantly with like this knowledge of, oh, there's this thing called Unix, which I had heard of before, but I thought, okay, there's Unix. I thought that only ran on like, I don't know, mainframes or something or big computers. I didn't know normal people could do that. And then it turned out that there was just a bunch of this Unix stuff out there that you could just download freely. And so I started downloading code, and I started compiling it on a Mac, and I would run it. And so I, for the longest time, I had this sort of just this abhorrent Frankenstein of a computer that like booted to Mac OS, but launched, literally launched to for a while Window Maker, and then for another while to Enlightenment E16 specifically. So it was a weird time, and so I called the podcast The Bad Apples, and then equally bizarrely, I happened to win. It's the only time this has ever happened, probably to anyone on Earth, but I happened to win a Sony Vaio, which was a laptop put out by Sony, VAIO, and it was like this Rosetta configuration. So it was like the Intel Core Duo chip set with the i95 graphics or something, whatever that one graphic chip is from Intel. So it was a very, very well known, like, Linux works well on this system. Like, it was Rosetta. It was just this sort of holy sort of trinity, probably. I don't know. Everything comes in threes, right? So it must have been of CPU and graphics and Wi-Fi chip that just kind of works with Linux. So I won this Sony Vaio online. It was like this super shady internet contest that I thought, you know what? I'll enter it. Maybe I'll get a free laptop, because I didn't have any money. So I thought, maybe I'll do that, and that way I'll have like a PC that I can run Linux on, like proper, real, just Linux. And amazingly, they actually delivered on the promise. I don't know why. This was, you know, 2007. I guess the internet was still young and naive. Like, they actually sent me the laptop that I'd won. I don't know why. That would never happen. You'd just get your information stolen. But yeah, so I got this PC, and I started running Linux on it. And then I discovered, either before that or after that, I discovered that Fedora ran on Mac OS at the time, or Mac computer. So I loaded that onto all my Apples. And yeah, that's what I was doing. And I met some geeks on IRC, made a bunch of friends, and eventually changed the name of the show to GNU World Order, because I wasn't really just running weird Unix stuff on Apple computers anymore. And so I called it GNU World Order, because I do have a morbid sense of humor, and I'd sort of constructed this imaginary doomsday scenario where GNU took over the world and forced everyone to comply with free software ideals, which is obviously the opposite of what I would believe or want in real life, but that's what you get when you grow up as a sci-fi nerd with a love of dystopian fiction and post-apocalypse, all that nonsense. So that's GNU World Order, just like this hyperbolic sort of like, look at how much of a threat open source is. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense in retrospect, but, you know, it's just, like I say, morbid sense of humor. And then on December 30th, I looked that up, 2019, I decided to make the show a weekly podcast. It might have even happened before that, but December 30th, I started doing just show numbers, like, instead of I had the season structure going on at one point. So I just decided I'm just going to start numbering the episodes. And I arbitrarily started at like 330 or something like that, because I figured, that's about as much as I've done. I took a count, and that's what I came up with. And so I started doing a weekly show. And, you know, my intent for the show from the very beginning really was pretty much to contribute to the culture of sharing. And I've said it before on the show, I truly believe that humans, barring external pressure, are kind of just naturally prone to share. Like, if I am in this state of belief that I have an abundance of a thing, then there's almost an urgency to redistribute it. You know, like, I have so much of it that I don't know what to do with it. So I'm going to share it with you. And speaking of that, do you need a refill on your coffee? You're looking like you're getting pretty low there. Anyway, when those external pressures, like, you know, we call it real life, when those pressures come into play, then we humans kind of start to resist that urge to share. But I think that urge to share is there deep down. But yeah, like, if I don't know what's going to happen next, I'm starting to feel kind of uneasy. I might need that thing for myself. I used to think I had so much I didn't know what to do with it and I could share it, but now I'm not so sure. Feeling nervous about what's to come. So I better hoard all of this for myself. So with open source, there's usually an abundance, right? Because code and digital assets can be copied and pasted, usually to no one's detriment. I mean, yeah, people have worked on that. And, you know, obviously, in today's society, the way that we have everything set up, you need to be paid for what you do or else you'll literally starve. So, I mean, there's all of that. But I'm saying with open source, where people consciously and with consent say, this is shareable, then when you take that and you make a copy of it, literally everyone has it, right? You're not taking it from someone and giving it to someone else. You're just duplicating it. And since the beginning of the show, of this podcast, I've professed a belief in anarchism, which I've never really felt the need to talk about specifically, because ideally I've been kind of demonstrating what I believe, or like practicing what I, well, hopefully not preach, but really just kind of living what I think that is, you know, like by sharing knowledge and enthusiasm and friendship, I've tried to exemplify the way at least I view anarchism, and specifically syndicalism. Syndicalism, big fancy word, read it somewhere, probably in Emma Goldman's writings initially, but it's basically, all it means is that you and I ought to be owners of the production of goods that you and I help produce and ultimately use. Like, we have the innate right to own the means of production, because we're human beings living on planet Earth with lots of other humans, and it's just good system design, if you ask me, to ensure that each participant in a system has an equal level of security. External pressures that threaten that sense of security ought to threaten the system as a whole, rather than like a subset of individuals within that system. Because that way the system can respond in a way that benefits everyone, instead of just having a random individual take desperate measures to regain that sense of security. Because those desperate measures are usually detrimental to someone else. Now, that's obviously not what this podcast has literally been about, but it is the context in which I've produced the show from the very beginning. I mean, I do like to think that I've grown and learned a lot since 2007. And, you know, you of all people, you know that you've contributed to that hugely. And certainly if I've contributed anything positive to your life, then I think the mission of this podcast has kind of been accomplished. I mean, heck, even if it's just the coffee break that you've enjoyed. That's good enough for me, man. I've made the decision, though, to stop production of the podcast, like I said before the coffee break, because I want to, you know, kind of free up some time in my schedule, really, for other projects. I love learning, so I want to leave time in my day for, like, really, really structured lessons, which I've already started. Like, I'm taking a couple of, not taking a course, but, you know, I'm working through courses in a variety of different disciplines. I want to contribute more to open source in ideally increasingly meaningful ways. And there are other projects in the works as well, some of them public, some of them not really necessarily public. I mean, just things that I like to do in my own time. But I mean, there's a lot sort of that I've got that I want to spend time on. And ultimately, doing a podcast, it takes time. And, you know, it has been fun, but I think I may have said, you know, kind of what I need to say. And I think it's kind of felt right to just to take that big, big, long look at Slackware and then kind of end it. That's not to say by any means that my enthusiasm for open source has, you know, waned or is ending at all. Obviously, I would hope that is obvious. But I do think that I think I can safely step aside and kind of let other content creators and other platforms serve the same purpose. And it's interesting, I think, to see what kind of how the language of content, how the language, the expectations of what people are saying online, how that has changed. To some degree, I don't think it has changed, right? I mean, people listen to this show as often as they do. And I don't know how many listeners I have. I've never looked at numbers. I used to just ask my listeners to email me if they listened to the show. And I would write there. I put their names in a file. And I had 30 listeners at one point. And it was very exciting for me. 30 known listeners. And that was great. And today, I don't know. Maybe I have 30. Maybe I have 3. I don't know. But I think it's interesting to see how sort of the consumption of content from the internet has changed. And I don't know where I stand within that spectrum, you know, sort of the, I don't know, I'm making things up now, but like the Spotify and where else do people get podcasts? Spotify and Apple Music? I don't know where people get podcasts, like wherever people get, or are people even doing, you know, is it just YouTube and people are calling that podcasts? People do. But I mean, yeah, there's a wide variety of sort of avenues out there these days. I don't love that they're owned by major corporations. As I've said, I think that owning the means of production is really, really important. And I think it's the thing that enables people to form systems themselves and to protect one another from those external pressures, to band together, to take control of what they want to do. I think that's a powerful thing. And I think podcasting is one of those expressions. You don't need a license for podcasting. You don't have to get training. You just have to figure it out and then you start posting. It's a beautiful, beautiful medium. So I don't think I'm going to get away from it entirely. If you've enjoyed this podcast, thank you again for listening. I have really appreciated the sense that someone else is on the other end of this microphone. It's nice to think that someone has heard this and that it has contributed to some little bit of joy in their life. And if that's you, and by the way, how is that coffee anyway? It really looks good. If that's you, it's great to have shared that with you. But anyway, I gotta get a refill of my coffee now. And I know you're busy, so thanks for showing up for the final recording. I appreciate it. This is the GNU World Order, signing off.
I'm delighted to be able to wish you a pleasant trip once more. And I hope to see you again very soon.
How to get right with Bob, and how to... Uncontrolled
thinking, controlled by Bob. Bring your weirdest dreams to rampaging life.
This is coffee. Our story begins here, with coffee. Its flavor caught in the closed fist of the bean, freed then by the grinding mills in an endless cascade, brewed into a beverage that is consumed in the hundreds of millions of cupfuls each day. In this beverage that has become so much a part of our lives, there is a background, a tradition that reaches deeply into the culture of many lands. Its beginning under warm tropical sun, the care and attention to which it is treated during its journey from tree to cup. Processes it must undergo are all devoted to creating good coffee, with its secrets of aroma and body and taste, to which the talents of millions of men are devoted during their lifetime, to which tradition, rich in the lore of centuries and really clean. Water into 100,000 pots an hour. The boiling water now passes up to a full, perfect coffee, and carefully measured. Time, carefully measured. A simple recipe for perfect coffee. Perfect coffee, sending its glow into our lives around the clock. It helps us start the day with warmth and vigor. It is a pleasant spur to the morning's work. It provides the essential part of our pause at noon, indispensable during that unhurried hour in a world that often forgets to stop. In the romance of evening, when young dreams glow softly, coffee is always a perfect companion. And after dinner, it is at home in any setting when good taste is important. In the end, it remains a simple thing. Easy to attain, well made and well enjoyed. A good cup of good coffee.
Have you ever read Dr. Blood Money by Philip K. Dick? It's a good one. And there's a character in there who, right before the, I guess this is a minor spoiler, but it does happen pretty early. So yeah, there's a character in there who, right before the end of the world, gets launched into space, like on a, you know, some kind of project going into space. And so he ends up, you know, orbiting the Earth, sees everything going down on Earth. And just basically to keep himself sane, probably, but also, you know, with that shred of hope that there's like one or two people down there on the planet left with a radio to listen to him. And that's, so he broadcasts like every day, and he broadcasts and just does a radio show from outer space. And it's like this, and he has no idea if he has listeners. It's just like this kind of brilliant sort of like, well, I don't know. It's kind of, it's an analogy for all of us, isn't it? It's like, ultimately, that's what we are each doing. I mean, not podcasters, although, I mean, yes, podcasters as well. Like, but I mean, anytime you put yourself out there, you're just kind of hoping, like, gee, I hope someone is listening and appreciates this, or, you know, I hope someone comes to my party, or whatever you're doing. It's like, I hope this is for someone else other than just me. But like, that's weird, because ultimately it is for you, right? I mean, when we do something, we are ultimately doing it, and I think we should be doing it for ourselves. Because if you're trying to tailor something for other people, then, I mean, that's just, you can't please everyone. So, I mean, like, you have to just do the thing that you are proud of, do the thing that you want to see in the world. And I guess in a way, that's what this podcast has been. You know, like, I want shows about Linux. I want shows that are positive and optimistic about open source. Like, that's what I want. And yeah, for like however many years, that's what this show has been. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do next. We'll see. But it's going to be, you know, if I do a podcast, which again, I can't really see myself entirely walking away from podcasting because I love it too much. So whatever it's going to be, you know, it's going to be another thing for myself with an eye on the earth way down there, hoping that, yeah, someone who needed to hear this today has heard it. And that's always a comfort. Okay, now, really, I'm going to play us out.
counterclockwise, push it back into the upward position to verify alignment, open the settings panel beneath the main console, and set the amplitude to the number now showing on the unit, and then adjust the unit according to regulations, then your signal will be strong and clear. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
You are still here. That is impressive dedication. I appreciate it. I was just about to go through the last batch of listener email. So you're here. We may as well go through it together. First one was from Deep Geek, longtime listener, probably practically from the beginning, really very early listener. All the way through, he made it. He says, "Hi, Klaatu. Just wanted to say I will sorely miss New World Order, but all projects only exist for a certain time. You had a great run. I do believe I have every episode done by you, and I enjoyed all I received. I also felt connected to a community through you. We had some great interactions where I felt that your podcast let other like-minded people know about things that I tried out, and I found that very gratifying. Just wondering, should we stay subscribed to your feed in case you have anything like a special interview or something come out, or will it just be an archive at this point? Thanks again for all you did and do." Deep Geek. Very nice message. Much appreciated. It's interesting to hear that Deep Geek felt like there was a community, because I don't feel like I did a whole lot to foster a community, really, as well as I guess I could have, although I don't know that GNU World Order was ever about forming a community for me. It was more just about conveying information. So, I mean, I think there's a good argument for trying to sort of form a community. And I guess at different times there were people that I would speak to at technical conferences and things like that who were familiar with what I did. So I guess in a way there was a community, but yeah, I think it was a rather disparate community. The advantage to that is that we all can just kind of go about our own lives and not sort of get sort of tangled up with each other's lives. But I mean, I guess that's also kind of the disadvantage, right? I mean, you don't get to meet new people through a common interest or whatever. So I don't know. There's advantages and disadvantages. Also, managing a community properly, I think, is actually proper work. Like it's a whole thing. And I don't believe that I was interested in doing that for GNU World Order. I've done it for other things in like a professional capacity, but not for a hobby project for myself. But it is interesting. I mean, I can't deny that. I think Deep Geek is right. I mean, there is a sense of community. You know that you're not the only person listening. I know you're not the only person listening. So, and I feel like I'm speaking to you, and maybe maybe you feel like I am speaking to you, because I mean I am, but I'm not really. We're not actually sort of interacting, and yet we are. And sometimes we very much do, because you'll email me and I'll email you back, or I'll respond to you on the show. So there is an interaction there. It's kind of a confusing and sort of almost a fever dream of like, did I really meet that person and hang out with them, or was that real or not real? And it's kind of both. So to get real for a moment, I'm going to give you my contact information just in case you want to contact me now that the show is over. Look, I just you and me here, so you can reach me, or you can find me rather, at either http://Seth, that's S-E-T-H, dot Kenlon, K-E-N-L-O-N, dot com, or Gopher, G-O-P-H-E-R, :// Gopher, G-O-P-H-E-R, dot info-underground.net. Should you want to email me, keep in mind I'm not great at keeping in touch with people, but I usually can respond to emails pretty well. That sort of comes naturally. So you can email me at seth.opensource@kenlon.com. That's Sierra Echo Charlie Hotel dot open source, all one string, at Kilo Echo November Lima Oscar November www.bob.com. Those are my basically permanent homes on the internet. So if you're looking around for what I'm doing next, those are the places to check out. Okay, next and final listener email is from Jim from pedalpc.com. If you're a longtime listener, you'll recognize Jim's name and, well, probably domain primarily. So he says, "Hi, Klaatu. I listened to episode 601 today in which you mentioned XFCE4-FindCursor. I've been using XFCE for many years and wasn't aware of this handy feature. Like you, my eyesight isn't always the best, and sometimes I lose the cursor. I was unable to find the keyboard setting for this either, but it's easy to set up a keyboard shortcut for it. In the default menu on Debian, but I presume others as well, choose Settings, Keyboard, then choose the Application Shortcuts tab. Click the Add button near the lower left corner, Enter XFCE4-Find-Cursor for the command, and then click OK. Now enter the keyboard shortcut you want to use. For instance, Control Meta M. It can be anything, but that's what Jim used. It's now set and should work if the Find Cursor checkbox under the Accessibilities mouse is checked like you described in episode 601. Thanks, too, for the various features you mentioned in Thunar. I wasn't aware of those either. The bulk file rename feature will come in handy, especially handy. It's funny to hear that he didn't know about the bulk file rename feature, because that, for me, I literally, honestly thought that that was the reason most people even knew what Thunar was. I don't know where I got that into my head, but I just thought maybe that it was just such a powerful feature and so polished that maybe I just assumed, oh, well, that's why people, that must be the star feature. But here's Jim from pedalpc.com saying that no, didn't even uses XFCE4, didn't even know about the Thunar feature. So that's kind of fascinating. He goes on to say, "I'm really sorry to hear you're going to halt GNU World Order. I have learned more useful information from your podcast than any other Linux-oriented podcast." That's quite the compliment. That was Klaatu's statement about the compliment. Back to Jim. "Given the amount of time it must take you to produce each episode, I can certainly understand why you are discontinuing the podcast. I just hope you will at least consider making occasional contributions to Hacker Public Radio. Jim." Thanks, Jim, for the email. Thank you for the clarification on how to create a keyboard shortcut. It's quite similar in KDE, so that's one of those tips that I think I'll probably be able to remember pretty well should I ever switch over to XFCE forever for life, which that's not off the table. Another thing that's not off the table is Hacker Public Radio. That's still an active podcast, and it gets a lot of listens if you believe the numbers of various web logging and monitoring tools. So that's definitely a good place, and arguably a better place for me to put content than this little tiny channel that I have. So, and it certainly removes any perceived burden of, posting on a regular basis, because you can just post whenever you want. So that's definitely not out of the question. I could see myself utilizing Hacker Public Radio as a platform. Now I'm really going to play us out.
so infinitely small that it takes over 100 billion atoms to make up the tiny building. Just as other millions and quadrillions of atoms are the tiny building blocks which make up everything in the world. Ships and shoes and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
You can't possibly still be here. You are. Hey. Have another cup of coffee. This one's on me. Don't worry about it. Well, I just don't even know what to say. Do you need a ride? Actually, so do I. Can I get a ride? Do you have a ride? If you have a ride, I'll take a ride. Otherwise, yeah, we'll just hang out here, I guess, for a little while. I used to work a graveyard shift at a TV station, bizarrely, a local TV station. This was back when they had local TV stations, I guess. That's probably not a thing anymore. I don't know. But I guess maybe it is. I don't know how it all works. But anyway, I had this job, graveyard shift. And so I would be driving in to work just before midnight, maybe? I don't know. It must have been later than that. Or maybe, no, it must have been midnight. Midnight to 8. Yeah, I think that was it. And I was driving in, and there was this local radio station. This was out in California. There was this local radio station that played, oldies, big band stuff. And that station went off air at midnight. So I would be pulling into the parking lot, or sometimes I'd stop on the way in, to get petrol, go in for a coffee, something like that. And I guess that's neither here nor there, actually. That doesn't affect the story at all. I would do that, though. That was part of the experience. And the TV station was out in the middle of the desert. It's California, Southern California. So you did get that. But it was, I drove in late at night, obviously, pull into the parking lot of the TV station at midnight. And just as I was pulling in, pretty reliably, because I had to be there at midnight. So pretty reliably, as I was turning, pulling into the parking lot, that radio station, which I think it was probably like the only radio station I could get or something. I mean, it was not a bad radio station. I just think that it literally was one of the few that I could get. They would be going off. They would be signing off. And they always played this folk song that I can't for the life of me remember the name of. I just don't remember. I have tried and I have tried and I keep thinking, Edelweiss? It's definitely not Edelweiss. So I don't know what it is. The closest thing I can sort of capture is what you just heard, the Auld Lang Syne, sort of mournful kind of version of that, because that was kind of the mood of this sign-off song. It was a beautiful song, and they would play the same, it was always that song. The guy would sign off, wish you farewell, whatever, and then that song would cue up. And so that was for a year or 2 years, however long I worked there, every night, pull into the parking lot, and here I'm, listening to the radio station signing off. And there was just something kind of weirdly beautiful to that, because it was kind of like middle of the desert, big empty dark sky, empty surroundings in general, and I would walk in and I'd be at work from 12 to 8. And it was just, it was a real, as you can probably imagine, a real atmosphere setter when you'd go in and you'd hear the radio station signing off. I mean, you were the only person left in the world at that moment. It was really fun. It was really nice. And that was actually when I was living in this weird sort of apartment complex. It was like this enclosed apartment complex that, because it had used to be a hotel and someone had purchased it and converted it into apartments. So, I mean, if you imagine, like, a hotel room, that was your apartment. Was that big enough, really, to be an apartment? Probably not. But it kind of had this weird, like, the guy who bought the place just sort of had this vision of kind of, like, of what, you know, of kind of, like, he wanted to have, like, kind of, for all intents and purposes, kind of like a luxury apartment complex, it was just less of it, if you know what I mean. Like, that was his plan. Like, he wanted the apartments to exist, and there, you know, there was the pool, because it's California and a hotel, so they had a pool, and they had laundry on site, and there were all these kind of amenities that you would just get, you know, for free, quote unquote for free. I mean, it was all factored into rent, I suppose, but it never felt like it. Like, he eventually sold, and I think he sold because he wasn't charging enough for the apartments, you know? But it was a cool idea, because it just felt very, very, I don't know, like, sort of, we're in this together, we're gonna all sort of hunker down in this hotel at the end of the world, at the, you know, the ledge of the continent. You know, this is California, so you feel like you're at the edge of the entire continent, because you are. Of course, there's desert, so there is that, but desert is sufficiently, the desert might as well be the ocean, right? Same thing. You look out forever and you see nothing but the same thing. So it was just kind of cool, because he just had this idea that you shouldn't have to be wealthy to live in luxury. You just, his theory was that you could just have less, smaller footprints of luxury. And I guess, yeah, I mean, I don't know if, I don't literally know why he sold and why he eventually just kind of left, you know, like he moved on to hopefully better things. But he was a really decent guy, and I remember when I went to look at the apartment initially, like, he just enthusiastically showed me all around the place, you know, and it was just so cool, his idea. And I wish I do wish it had lasted, and you know, looking back, I guess I hope he, like I said, I hope he did go on to something cooler and better and sort of kept on going with his ideas. But so that's where I was living at this time. And so the nights, so I was working the graveyard shift. So then the two days that I would have off, I would, you know, when you're working the graveyard shift, you don't just switch your sleeping schedule for the weekend. You know, it's just you continue to exist at night. And that's a weird experience, because no one else is awake. And so I would go out and sit by the pool. And there was this other tenant there who would come out sometimes and sit by the pool. And it was this kind of weirdly magical sort of conversation, you know, or like this encounter, because you don't know each other, you don't even know why you're both awake, and next thing you know, you find yourself talking about, you know, like, I don't know, books by Philip K. Dick about spacemen who are broadcasting a radio show to people on a dead Earth, you know. I mean, it's just, I don't know, you just start talking about weird things. And it's all very sort of normal in the moment, because it's so abnormal. And then you wander off, and it feels kind of like, in retrospect, like, was that just a dream? Like, did I actually, like, do that? Did I actually have accidental rendezvous by the glowing pool of a luxury apartment in California? It just doesn't, that didn't happen, right? But it did. It's just, it's one of those weird kind of moments, and I kind of wonder sometimes if like this moment with you, is that going to be a thing that I look back and think, oh, did I meet a listener, like, after I was shutting down this show for good, and then we just started chatting about things over coffee? Or was that like a fever dream? But yeah, it's, you know, I mean, I guess it's both, right? Because I'm not really talking with you, but I mean, you're here, you're hearing my voice, so I guess we are talking. Anyway, we should wrap this up. I mean, this is the last show. This was not even meant to go on for this long, right? I mean, this is really pushing it.
You complaining when it was lightening the workload.
I am registering a complaint now. I don't like being left out of things around here.
It's just you and that beast. This is meant to be a retreat from the factory, Ed, not an extension of it.
Cindy, I thought you understood, appreciated what I'm trying to do here.
I did, Ed, I did. Past tense. It's just been too bloody long. You have lived and breathed those machines of yours to the detriment of everything else, including me.
Even when we make love, I feel like I've just got your body and that's all.
Your hands off! Screwing the I-500! Oh.
Look, I can do without this.
Impossible demands for the delivery of a machine with an obvious malfunction that is not ready to leave the factory floor.
What are you doing to yourself?
You stick to what you know. I'll stick to the I-500.
Well, that's fine by me. Marry the beast for all I care.
Why do you think you're being paid $2 million?
The I-500 does everything we contracted for. It's the most sophisticated sensory surveillance hardware on the market. This tinkering around of his. The malfunction.
Fallinger still has control of the prototype. If we can't deliver the I-500 at the latest by the end of this month, we'll be in serious trouble. And you'll be facing the end of a very long career in electronics with nothing to show for it.
Strange George, so am I. Pay close attention, because the information you're about to hear could mean the difference between life and death.
Hello, all you people out there in Gameland. Today we're going to play an exciting new game called Loop-A-Lot. Now, this is based on the scientific principle. You put your finger in the hole, and you think that if you put it right there, or you spin it around, I'll drop my penny. I'll be right back. You spin the Loop-A-Lot, you stop, or you still got the penny. Now, where did the penny go?
If I could just make a decent cup of coffee, I could relax.